Okay. There's different kind of pressure in life, but that kind of introduction. I only wish that my parents would have been here. My father would have been proud, and my mother would have believed every word.
That's great.
I want to speak about anger. We have about 50 minutes until Mincha. And I want to speak about the midah of kas, of anger. I was mentioning to some of the people when we were talking that in advance of our trip, I gave the program 20 different selected topic possibilities. And of the 5 lectures that I'll be giving, one is going to be an interesting topic, but it's unconnected. It's about medical ethics and halacha. But 4 of them are going to be about midos. And it was not necessarily planned in such a deliberate way, but that's the way it worked out. And I think that with all of the emotion that all of us are bringing to this trip and what we've all been going through the last 2.5-3 weeks, I think it was b'hashkacha that midos are something that we can all work on. Midos are something that we all, relatively speaking, but all of us struggle with. Having good midos is not... And struggling with that is not limited to one part of the community or another. And it's something that we can all hopefully grow together. Some of the topics in particular are going to be relating, I think, to some of our emotions. I'm going to be speaking about issues connecting to machlokes and getting along. And the achdus that I think Klal Yisrael is feeling now, I think I'll be addressing even more directly in some of the other talks. But I didn't pick that anger should be the first of the lectures, but it actually is apropos to my title, of anger, the gateway midah. So before I explain to you exactly what I mean and we really dive deep into a Torah understanding of anger and then the flip side, the importance of controlling our tempers, I want to share with you, I want to open, I guess, perhaps the most central source one could think of to open a topic like this is a comment of the Rambam. Maimonides, the Rambam. The Rambam is very famous in the world of thought, of Jewish philosophy, of machshava, for his philosophy known as the Shvil HaZahav, or in English they translate it as the golden mean. The Rambam, as we know famously, is against extremism. And he points out, with many examples, that even characteristics, midos, which seem to be inherently good, but if taken to an extreme, they can be unhealthy and counterproductive. And the Rambam gives numerous examples. He speaks, for example, about courage and being, I guess you could call it a coward. And the Rambam says, in extreme, neither of them are good. Even courage is not good in extreme. Someone's so courageous, they walk right in the middle of the highway. He's courageous. That's not healthy. The Rambam speaks about generosity. It's another famous example the Rambam gives. Generosity. What could be better than being a generous person? Right? The opposite is a kamtzan, someone who doesn't give away any of their money, doesn't share anything. But the Rambam says, even there, there's halachas about how much you should give away. You don't want to give away everything. You have to do that also with balance. That's what the Rambam is famous for. However, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that there are 2 exceptions to this rule. The rule he's very famous for, but there are 2 exceptions. The first example that the Rambam gives is a topic which I'll be discussing later in the week, humility versus arrogance. Now, what exactly is humility as opposed to self-confidence and healthy self-image, etc.? That's going to be the topic later in the week. But the Rambam says, when it comes to arrogance, to be defined later, the Rambam says there's no room for arrogance. That's not for the healthy middle. Arrogance, again, we have to define it, which we're not now. It's not our topic today. But arrogance, he says, there's no room for. An extreme, get rid of it. But the second thing that the Rambam says is anger. Hakas midarahi ad lemaod. Anger is a terrible vice, a horrible characteristic. V'roi la'odom shiyisrachak mimena ad hakatzeh ha'acher. Not in the middle, but to the extreme. A person should run away from anger. It's interesting that we see a central focus on the destructive power of anger in perhaps the most well-known of the hashkafic or philosophical writings of the Ramban as well, Nachmanides. The Ramban also has many writings where he discusses thought, machshava, but the Ramban has, as I'm sure many of you are familiar with, a very famous letter, Igeres HaRamban, Many of you have read it. There's a very beautiful volume that Art Scroll put out many years ago by Rabbi Foyer. It was in Miami, then in Muncie, now it's in Yerushalayim, son-in-law of Rav Gifter. So it's a beautiful book, the Art Scroll version, with very good explanations. It's worth getting. But just let me remind you, for those of you who may be unfamiliar, how does the Ramban begin this very famous letter, this legacy he's leaving, this ethical will, as it's called, to his children? What does he open with? Shma b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh Torah simecha, the very famous reference. Titnaheg tamid ledaber kol devarecha benachas l'chol adam b'chol eis u'bezeh tinatzel min hakas. The first focus of the Ramban: speak calmly, be a soft-spoken person. But why? That's a method, not a goal. What's the first goal of the Ramban? That you should be saved, that you should avoid anger, because it's such a catastrophic, terrible, characteristic midah. And of course, both Ramban and Rambam, of course, are taking this from words of Chazal. In a number of places in Medrash, in Gemara, in Zohar, Chazal speak with very strong language, calmly but strongly, against anger. And perhaps the most notable of the descriptions, which is really shocking, at least at first, is what the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos on the Kuf Hei. The Rambam actually quotes this also there in Hechos Deos. I stopped before I read that part to you, but the Rambam does quote this, where the Gemara says that someone who loses his temper, kol hakoes ki'ilu oved avodah zarah, it's as if they worship idols. They're idolatrous. It's a very, very dramatic statement. So the Mefarshim try to understand. There's different explanations. On some level, you have to assume that Chazal are a little poetic license, a little bit exaggerating. No one says it's Yehar Gval Yavar to get angry, the way it is to bow down to an idol. But still, what does Chazal mean? Obviously, they mean it very seriously. And there's different explanations for it, but I think the simple understanding connects to the issue of arrogance. Right? Why are we arrogant? Let me say that way. Why do, often, not always, and I'll try to get back to this point in a little bit also, but on some level, I think intuitively, we all understand that there's a connection between those two ideas. Often, it's our pride being hurt, which leads to our losing our temper. And there's a paradox, but of course it makes a lot of sense, that the closer we are to the person, the more we have potential to be angry. Right? Strangers, we hope they give us a decent amount of respect. But our spouse, our children, if you're a Rebbe, you're Talmidim, so if they don't do what you expect, so we really are vulnerable. It doesn't mean we're all in control. But we've already mentioned before, control. That's another big point in the Rambam and in general. A person has control of their actions, no question about it. But we're vulnerable to losing our anger when our ego is impinged. But what's underlying both of those things is an illusion, and I use that word advisedly, an illusion of control, which modern man, and whichever part of the Orthodox community you're from, we're all modern, with lowercase m, modern man, people living in the century that we live in, we have a far greater susceptibility because of our technological prowess, our abilities now. We live with an illusion of control much of our lives. On some level, there is an aspect of avodah zarah in that illusion. Because the truth is, as we all really know and really believe, we don't control anything. So, again, in certain calmer moments, it's easier for ma'aminim to articulate that. But when the ego is tripped and anger is in control, we lose sight of that. And when things don't go our way, we lose control. We see that we weren't in control, and that often triggers anger. So on some level, there's a form of heresy, a form of kfira, a form of avodah zarah. Diluted, obviously, but a form of it, at least. If Chazal tells us it, then it's there. On some level, of avodah zarah, because anger and ego relate to our illusion that we're in control, that we're owed all sorts of things, which really think about it, who said? So the to the extent that we could say, and this would perhaps be the understatement of the year, that anger, that kas, is an avon chamur, it's a serious avera, it's not minakalos, it's minachamuros, for sure true. It'd be worth reviewing it just because it's important. If that's all I meant to say, it'd be worth it already now. But that's actually not what I want to tell you. Because we all probably already knew, and even though it's always good to review what we know, anger, especially if we have regular trouble controlling our anger, it's an avon chamor. There aren't that many things that Chazal compared to avodah zarah. But I think there's something deeper than that. And I think the problem with anger is actually far greater, if you could say such a thing. It's far greater than the fact that it's just, I use that in quotes, obviously, that it's just connected to avodah zarah. It's much worse than that. What do I mean? So I could approach this second, and this is really the main thrust, my thesis, which I'd like to develop with you. I could approach it from a number of ways, but one of the sources, which I think will illustrate the point, is one of my favorite makoros in general. So that's what I'll start with. If you think back, it's a little bit out of our memory now, but if we could jog our memory, that's something we're all familiar with, the Pesach story. Before we're taken out of Egypt, obviously, Hashem, in His infinite wisdom, and there's enough to talk about on this, if this would be a Pesach trip, why Hashem, instead of just taking us out, first decided to go through a process of 10 makos, of destroying Egypt. But Hashem, that was the decision. If I would take a poll among the children, if you think about your children or your grandchildren, this is for sure, for the younger generation, what is their favorite makkah? What do you think? Anyone disagree? Right, we have people from very different communities here, right? I think this is pretty much broadly speaking, right? Children especially, right? I grew up with the song. Everybody grew up with, not my kids in Eretz Yisrael. Frogs here, frogs there. Right? My children, it was such a heartbreaking thing for me. My older two children learned it in Baltimore, but my younger two children in their younger grades were already learning in Eretz Yisrael, so there's many brachas to that, but they don't know the frog song. Their older siblings had to teach it to them. So frogs is the second makkah, right? We know that the frogs are now, in all seriousness, frogs are here, frogs are there, frogs are jumping everywhere, etc., etc. Egypt is a very big country. How many frogs? The Torah attests that frogs were covering the entire Mitzrayim. So did the Torah mean it literally? It's hard to know. But if the Torah says that there were frogs throughout the Tachas es Eretz Mitzrayim, it covered Mitzrayim, it blanketed Egypt, we must be talking about millions, at least, millions of frogs. So what is striking? When the Torah addresses this is in Parakhas of Sefer Shmos, when Hashem tells Moshe to tell Aaron to bring this second plague, it says, V'ha'al es ha-tzvardi'im al Eretz Mitzrayim. You'll tell Aaron with the stick to bring up the frogs, bring up from the river, of course, into Mitzrayim, into Egypt. What is surprising, therefore, is in the very next pasuk, where the Torah tells us that Aaron did just that. He, v'yad Aaron es yodo al meimei Mitzrayim, v'ta'al ha-tzvardeya. And of course, the inconsistency, which many of you are familiar with, is that this is now Lashon Yachid. It's not Svardim in plural, it's one frog. Now, that would have had to be a pretty big frog for one frog to cover the whole country. So this is, of course, we were not the first sensitive readers of the Torah text. Chazal already noted this discrepancy. They addressed this problem in the Medrash, and we're all familiar with this Medrash because Rashi quotes the Medrash. Rashi explains as variations of the Medrash, the version that we typically have if we open up the Chumash and Rashi, is that in fact one frog came out. Each time they would hit it, v'hayu makinosa, haya matezes nechilim nechilim. Now, when I was a kid, they taught me that each time you hit the frog, it split into two. And they'd hit it again, and it would split into two, and split into two. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, so the other Midrashim, but Rashi says, but it's the same point. Rashi says it was one super frog, but not so big to cover Egypt. They thought, it's a very logical thing, right? If you have a threat, a physical threat, right, you get your best commandos, You know, you'll attack from the north, from the west, you know, you surround it, and you'll try to kill it. Makes a lot of sense. It was totally reasonable what the Egyptians did. And they hit it with whatever the weapon of the day was. But instead of the frog dying, what happened? According to the way Rashi quotes it, it was like out of like, you know, it was like an arcade game. It was at a carnival, right? You hit the frog, instead of ribbit, reams of little frogs came out. That's Rashi, Adkan, the Rashi we all know, the Medrash we all know. So I have a question for you. The fact that the Egyptians did it the first time, I already said, I think it made total sense. Now what happened? Not what they were expecting. That they did it a second time, I could also hear, maybe they used a wooden stick, now they want a metal stick, they have a sword, then they had a spear. They try a few times, right? It makes sense, you know, it didn't work the first time, you know, don't give up, try again. But if in fact, as the Torah tells us, and we know because Paro was brought to his knees, right? According, again, I don't want to be too graphic about what Chazal say, where the frogs went. But there were millions of frogs. How many times must they have had to hit the frog, the one big frog, the original frog, in order for there to be millions of frogs? The answer is clearly thousands. Many, many, many times they had to hit the frog. One time, two times, three times, I could hear. But at some point, what, there was no one who was enough of a chacham to just say, fellas, it's 1,000 frogs, 10,000 frogs in Mitzrayim is not so good. It's not exactly a good public health situation either. But if we'll just stop now, we can live with it. The kids will have what to play with. You know, obviously they didn't stop. Why not? So I want you to know, even though I said I'm going to ask you a question, it's not my question. But I never thought of this question. I'm trying to think how many years. I mean, over 20 years I know this Rashi. I didn't think to ask this question. But who did ask the question? Again, maybe others have. But as far as I know, the first, and time I've seen in print, this question was asked by the Stipler Gaon. Okay. So many of you know one of the great contemporary Gedolim, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. You've heard his name from Bnei Brak. This is his father. He came from a shtetl called Hornestipel. If you know the Twersky Hasidic dynasty, the Twerskys are also from Hornestipel. But I guess since he wasn't a Hasid, he dropped the Hornest part. So he just became the Stipler Gaon. But they're from the same shtetl. So the Stipler is famous for his Chidushim on Gemara, Kilas Yaakov. I have them at home, the whole set on Shas. Many people have those volumes. But he has one thin volume on Torah called Birkas Peretz. So he asks this question, and he gives a very keen psychological insight. And he says, you know what happened? The Egyptians got angry. Because what is one of the triggers? And that's a very common modern psychological term, triggers. But the Stipler was very astute. He says, what's one of the triggers of anger? Not the only, but what's one of the triggers of anger? Unmet expectations. You make a plan, you had an assumption, you executed the plan, and it doesn't work out the way you expected. So, Rabbi Gregorio spoke before about being sad about the disappointment. That's one possible result. But an alternate possibility, maybe it's a different personality type, but other people get angry, especially when the reason it didn't work out could be attributed to someone or something else. Right? Why do parents get angry when their children don't clean up the room? So there's a few reasons, but the truth is when the children at some point say to you, like, what does it matter? Right? On some level, they're right. Does it really matter if the socks are off the floor? So why, and as adults, we're hopefully smarter than our children, so why do we get angry? Because I asked you two or three times. And my expectation as a parent is if I ask you, you'll listen. And since you didn't do it, when we have unmet expectations, we get upset. Let's be honest. It is, on some level, that's the basis of many of the arguments we have with our spouses. That's many of the Shalom Bayis issues. Now, again, part of the problem, whether it's for parenting or for Shalom Bayis, is that we have sometimes unrealistic expectations. That's a separate discussion. But for our purposes, when we expected our husband to do something, we expected our wife to do something, right? I know if I'm at the grocery store and I come home and my wife says, well, didn't you get X, Y, and Z? And if I didn't, so I might be tempting her. Okay, my wife would never get angry. For sure, never, ever. For sure, not me. But I give her often reason to be angry with me. Why? Because she asked me to do something, and lo and behold, it didn't get done. So isn't it reasonable to assume that if you asked your husband to do something, that he would do it? It is reasonable. And if they don't do it, that's a trigger. You could be vulnerable to anger. So that's what the stipler says happened with the Egyptians. He doesn't insult them. He doesn't put them down. No, they're very smart people. They had reasonable expectation. There's a frog. There's a danger. Call the army. Kill the frog. So what happened, he says? A vicious cycle. They went to hit the frog. And it didn't die. On the contrary, the problem got worse. So they got angry. And what do you do when you get angry with a frog? You hit it. Another zex. And what happened? The problem got worse. And then what do you do when that happens? You get really angry. And what do you do when you're really angry? You hit it again, and again, and again, and again. And the problem, all of a sudden, before you know it, the country is full with frogs. Says the stipler, don't think that we're any different or any better than the Mitzrayim. Than the Egyptians. V'chein hu b'chol makom shekoasim. This on some level is the root of the problem every time we lose our temper. He gives a particular example. Somebody says something to provoke you. They insulted you or whatever the case may be. They provoked you. They pushed your buttons. And again, there's a certain irony, which is actually not ironic, that the people we're closest with know best how to do that. So what happens, says the stipler. Again, I'm not talking about someone who's overly sensitive. Somebody legitimately insulted you, they legitimately provoked you. It happens in life. Strangers, not strangers. So it says, if we would just let it go, then it would have just been a bump. It's a nothing. You move on. But what happened? We get angry. When we get angry, we respond. When we respond, what does the original person do? They have to respond. And before you know it, the kitchen sink is involved. Right? Because then we throw everything in. It's not just that you didn't take out the garbage. It's you never take out the garbage. And by the way, I never liked your mother. The kitchen sink. Everything gets involved once we get angry. What's the upshot, the uptight of this? What the stipler is teaching us, and I'll try to develop this in a moment, is that when we get angry, we lose control. Because as happened to the Egyptians and happens to every one of us, when we get angry, almost guaranteed, invariably, we make matters worse. When is the last time something went wrong? You got angry about it, and you could honestly look back and say, you know, when I got angry, I solved everything. My marriage is much better now that I shared how I really feel. My children really respect me now that I lost my temper and screamed. And I don't need to give you personal examples. I think we all have our own examples where we can look back honestly and say the situation was bad, and somebody, whether it was me or you or somebody else, when anger got introduced, it made everything worse. It's counterproductive. Exactly what happened with the Egyptians, according to the stipler. What do you see from this, says the stipler? That when we're angry, we lose control and we do things which we know when we're in control, when we cool down. Of course, that makes that's terrible parenting. No, you should never do that, or whatever the case may be. When we're calm, we can easily see why these are mistakes. But what happens when we get angry? We lose control. What the stipler says is interesting. In English, there's an idiom, there's a saying which I think captures it perfectly. There's different ways that we can sometimes describe people who are really angry. Not just, you know, a little bit of a hiccup, but someone really loses their temper. One of the ways we sometimes refer to it in English, it's a little bit of a slang, an idiom, but sometimes we'll say, he or she lost their mind. You should have seen it. Somebody cut them off at the red light, and he got out of his car, and he's screaming at him, and then he lost his mind. Says the stipler, exactly. The kernel of the problem with kas, with anger, more so than any other of the other bad midos we should be avoiding in life, is that anger has the unique ability to make us lose our mind. Or as he puts it, we lose control. And because of that, we do many other things. Anger is not like running in place. Anger is like rolling downhill. That's what I mean when I say in my title, anger is a gateway mita. Because anger leads to so many other things which just make the problem and other things just worse. That's the problem with anger. Koheles in Perek Zion refers to someone who gets angry as a ksil, not as a rasha, as a ksil. What's a ksil? A fool. So if anger is so bad because it's like a avodah zara or whatever, you would think the person is wicked. That's not what Shlomo HaMelech teaches us. Shlomo HaMelech is the wisest of all men. Because if you get angry, you're a fool. What does that mean, a fool? Because in your calmer moments, you easily see how all the things that you did or said when you were angry were really a mistake and foolish. So, we're all fools. He's not, certainly I'm not, Chas V'Shalom, insulting anybody, but we all realize this, that the things that we do when we're angry are often foolish. So how come we just never get angry? Yeah, because on some level, we don't have that control. But there's a certain foolishness to it. And it's counterproductive. Anger, it makes everything worse. It makes our ben adam l'makom worse, and it makes our ben adam l'chavero worse. Any vice, any yetzer hara, any weakness that you have anyway, is worse when you throw anger into the mix. We can make plenty of mistakes when we're calm too. But when anger gets mixed in, it's like supercharged. So for example, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, it's interesting, the Gemara actually has a similar language that we use commonly in English. The Gemara talks about being anyone who gets hot, tartia. Anyone who gets hot will sin. Anyone who avoids, that's the lashon of the Gemara. If you avoid getting hot, you won't sin. Rashi says, what does it mean to get hot? If you don't get angry. Because anger leads to sin, the Chafetz Chaim and others speak about. Think about, what are the typical sins? Let's say a vocal, I don't mean Chas V'Shalom with physical demonstrations of our anger. But let's say we're just yelling at somebody. A stranger, a spouse, a child, whoever. What are some of the other averos that get thrown in the mix when we get angry, typically? Lashon Hara, for sure. Because not only when we're there, after the argument, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen after an argument? Mincha. Well, I don't mean because of the davening part. I mean because when you go to shul, you have to tell everybody. Do you know what you... So Lashon Hara for sure. What else? Sinas Chinam. Or Sinas somebody. For sure. Machlokes. Jealousy. Every one of these things are averos, which most of us are in control of. Most of us avoid those. When we're calm, our yetzer hara for those is way down. But once anger gets in the mix, it's the gateway mida. It leads to so many other things. And of course, it's also true in Ben Aram v'chavero. Just think about the interpersonal relationship that we have with people. As I said before, when's the last time anger made any relationship better? Solved any problem? So you'll tell me, well, sometimes, you know, my children need to see, you know, that they really did something wrong. The Rambam knows that too. The Rambam was very progressive in his parenting. The Rambam said, sometimes your children need to see you got angry, you did something wrong. So you know what the Rambam says? You should pose, you should pretend. Even then, says the Rambam, there's no heter to be angry in your heart, no matter what your children did. And certainly no matter what your spouse did. But sometimes children need to see as if you're angry. I'll give you as a simple example of that, which those of us who have younger children or younger grandchildren, you can certainly relate to. At some point in the life of most little children, they walk into the street without looking. So what do the parents or the grandparents who's there do? not just say, you know, Shepsalah, it's not a right thing. And that's not what I did when my children walked in the street. You know what I did? I yanked them back and I gave them a little potch. That was, did they deserve a potch? Was I really angry at them? No. That's all an act. And I certainly didn't do it to hurt them, and I didn't hurt them. Not even close. I did it to try to make an impression. So the Rambam says, even if you have older children, and the problems can be a lot worse than taking two steps into the street. So the Rambam says, okay, you think they need that educationally? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if you think they do, okay. So then pretend to be angry. But you can't be... What's the difference between being... What is the difference between pretending to be angry and being angry? And the answer is...
Control.
Exactly. That's the point. The essence of the problem of anger is lack of control. And I think on some level, this is my own shot, I think on some level this goes back to the Ki'ilu Avod Avod Azara. Because I think the idea of a Jew being in control is so central, is so definitional to our hashkafa, to what it means to be a Jew, to be a mensch, that a person who loses control, on some level, there's already a form of avodah zarah in there, because that's definitional to mean what it means to be a Jew, is to be in control. And the state I mentioned before, how sometimes we calm down, and this happens all the time in either parenting or in marriage situations. How often does it happen where a person loses control, and at some point, then what happens? They calm down, and then they feel terrible. And the husband has to go to his wife and apologize. I didn't mean to say what I said. The wife should go to the husband, parents go to children. You know, what you did was wrong, but I shouldn't have gone as far as I... And by the way, we should apologize. It takes a gibor to apologize. We should apologize. But the point is, on some level, we all understand we make things worse, but it's more than that. The time is running short. I cannot give you all the examples, but there are a number of examples in Chazal, in Midrashim, and in Gemaras that speak about people who lost everything, the most valuable things you could imagine, because of anger. So for example, the Gemara in Pesachim, very famous Gemara. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us that there are a number of people, or a number of examples of people who lost their most prized possessions because of anger. The Gemara says, Kol Adam Shekoes, Im Chacham Hu, Chachmaso Mistalakes Mimenu. The biggest Talmud Chacham in the world, says the Gemara. But if he loses his temper, he loses his Torah, he loses his Chacham. The Gemara gives examples. The Gemara continues. Im Navihu. If he gets angry, Nevuaso Mistalekes Mimenu. He'll lose his Nevuah. Example after example, including with Moshe, according to some Mefarshim, not everybody, but according to the Rambam, for example, in Mor Nevuchim, what was Moshe's sin? By the rock, not hitting it. That's not what the... Not, that's not... That's Rashi. The Rambam says, Shimon HaHamorim, the Moshe got angry. Moshe lost his Nevuah and he lost his ability to go into Eretz Yisrael because he got angry. Kas cost Moshe everything. The Psikta, Rabasi, one of the more esoteric Midrashim, says that it was supposed to be, think about this for a minute, this is mind-boggling. The Midrash says that in our Tfilas, in our Shemona Esrei, where we say every day, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, there was supposed to be a fourth. Who's the fourth? Says the Gemara. It says the Medrash, excuse me, it was supposed to be Eov. L-O-K-E-O-V. Amazing Medrash. So how come it's not? Because the Medrash says, he got angry and he yelled at Hashem. Now most of us are not such big experts in Sefer Eov, but the basic storyline we know. Right? He was a tzaddik, the Sultan said, test him, and Hashem took everything away from him. For most of the Sefer, he accepts it with tremendous, tremendous bitachon. So a little bit, says the Gemara, a little bit, he had some tainas. At some point, the weight was too much to bear, and he got upset at Hashem. Do you know what he lost? You can't even put into words what he lost. So on our level, none of us could sit in judgment of Eov, considering what was taken away from him. But on his madrega, apparently, says the Medrash, that anger that he had, that inability at some point to control himself, cost him everything. He was supposed to be one of the Avos. He was supposed to be Elokei, 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 Eov. But not because he lost his temper. Or the Gemara says, another example, a little bit less esoteric, but since it's in Tanakh, so for most Yeshiva Bachram, it still might as well be Zohar. Who was Eliyav? David HaMelech's older brother. Says the Gemara, say Chazal, he was supposed to be the Melech Yisrael. So how come he lost the Melucha? It's not Mashiach ben Eliyav. Because he got angry. He lost his temper. Anger, you could lose everything. So, I want to flip it now. Because one of the, I think also, very cardinal, central points that we have in our hashkafa, in our worldview, is ze lumad ze asa Elokim. Whatever Hashem puts in the world, it's always in proportion. That's where the Rambam got it from. It's balanced. So if we see how destructive anger can be, we should be on the lookout for how positive and how powerful a force controlling our anger can be. And sure enough, we have Divrei Chazal, we have Medrash, we have Gemara, Mefarshim that speak with unbelievable praise about exactly this idea. So for example, in Mishlei, we saw before, in one sense, that Koheles said that someone who gets angry is a fool. But we also have Shlomo HaMelech referring to someone who is Seichel Adam. Only a wise person is Herich Apo, slow to anger. Because again, it's not just about Russia or Tzaddik. On some level, it's about how much of a chacham we are, how wise we are. Because we all understand, logically, what is anger going to help? It's wise to be slow to anger. Not only that, we saw, if you don't get angry, think about how many averos you'll be saved from. Tremendous. And more than that, the Medrash says, for example, why was Yehoshua selected to be the second leader? So it's true in various psukim, it talks about his dedication to Moshe. He was a Talmud. It's true. On a certain level, he was a natural successor. However, Chazal say he wasn't the biggest tzaddik, he wasn't the biggest Talmud Chacham. Osniel bin Knaz was a bigger Lamdan. So why Yehoshua? So again, there could be different explanations, but there are some in Chazal, some in Drashim, that speak about not Yehoshua's tzidkus, and not Yehoshua's loyalty to Moshe, but Yehoshua's personality. When Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu already, this is in the Torah, before you get to the Navi, in the Nevi'im, but Moshe wants someone, Ish Asher Ruach Bo, is a man of spirits, or something, a wind of something. So the Medrash says, what does it mean? It means someone who can blow in the wind. Someone who's tough, so if there's a strong wind, they're brittle, they break. They lose their temper. But someone who knows how to deal with people, so the wind blows this way, even though I like to be straight down the middle, but I, in this particular situation, the wind is blowing to the east. Nope, I'll bend a little bit to the east. But tomorrow the wind's blowing to the west. Nope. I'll bend a little bit. Says the Medrash, Yehoshua knew how to get along with everybody. Those who were calm, who needed a little extra time after davening to talk to Yehoshua, he spoke to them, he gave them all the time. Those who were kapdonim, who were quick to anger, Yehoshua knew how to deal with them. We saw people, Eliyav, Eov, people lost everything because of anger. And Yehoshua gained everything because of his personality, his ability to control his temper, to control his anger. Moreover, we know that perhaps one of the most ambiguous characters in the entire Torah is Noach. So, despite the famous Rashi that we all know about, some people say yes, some people say no, but many people point out, the Torah itself tells us that Noach was Matzachein Beinei Hashem. So leave aside the issue of how great or not Noach was. But everyone understands, everyone agrees that if the Torah gives you that statement, that's a compliment. He was Matzachein Beinei Hashem. He found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Now, on its own, that is a very vague statement, right? Maybe Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem because he had the longest Shemona Esrei. Maybe he found favor in the eyes of Hashem because they were the most tsnuim in his family. Maybe he found favor in his eyes because he had Bikur Cholim. We don't know. But there is a Sefer called the Sefer HaCharedim. This is not a political Sefer. The Sefer HaCharedim was written by a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo before Charedi as a political term even existed. It was from Tzfat and was from the Gedolim of that generation in Eretz Yisrael. And he wrote a book of mitzvos. He's like Alkali. And he wrote a Sefer called the Sefer HaCharedim. So in that Sefer, I don't know where he gets it from, but his chiddush is, says, what does the Torah mean when it says Noach was a matzachein b'nei Hashem? That Noach didn't get angry. That Noach was provoked in general when he was building the ark. Noach had, like everyone in life, let's just be make it very simple. And because Noach knew how to control his anger, says the Sefer HaCharedim, that's why Noach avoided a Holocaust. Yehoshua had all the kavod anyone could ever want because he didn't lose his anger. Noach saved his life and the life of the whole mankind. As bad as Chazal speak about what you could lose when you lose control and lose your anger, zeh lumat zeh, the brachos that await us if we can control ourselves. And I want to conclude with one more Gemara and a story. I think I have time for that. Who's going to be our official timekeeper? What time is Mincha?
6:50.
How much time do I have until then?
You have 5 minutes.
No, 10 minutes.
Half hour. It's not 7:15.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to. I'll take seven.
No,
this was 7:10. Okay, the Mincha's at 7:50. Okay. I didn't make the schedule. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says in the Darim, it's also in the Medrash, Yalkut Shimoni, Kol HaKoes, Kol Mine Gehenim, Sholtim Bo. Anyone who gets angry, all forms of Gehenim will rule over him or her. What does that mean? We don't like to talk about Gehenim. Right? We talk about Olam Haba and the good things, but to be a maimon means that there's schar v'onesh, and that if you don't do the right thing, you could get in trouble. Again, Gehenim does not mean what other religions think it means. It is not Dante's Inferno. But whatever it is, which I don't really know what it is, but whatever it is, it's not a good place. We don't want to go. We don't want that. But that there's a Gehenim, okay. What is Mine Gehenim? What's Mine? Mine is plural. So there are, again, the time is running short. There are Mefarshim, early Mefarshim that deal with this. The Ran, there in the Gemara Nedarim. Those of you familiar, in the Nedarim, the Ran is on the page. You have to turn to the back of the Gemara. It's right there on the page. So the Ran discusses that on that Gemara. But I always thought that the Pshat is as follows. And Baruch Shekivanti, I found that just recently, that the great Mashiach, Rav Yerucham Levavitz, said it before me. So I can share this with people, like maybe I'm, now I can say it with confidence, that I thought of something that I know. If he thought of it, so that means it's more correct than me. What does that mean? Kol Mine Gehenim. So I'll tell you what I think it means. Anger is a gateway midah. If we are angry people, then we're going to do lots of other averos too. And it's true that after 120, a person who lived an angry life is going to go to Gehenim. But kol mine Gehenim means that even though that's all true, an angry person is not going to have to wait till 120 because their life is going to be a living hell. Do you know angry people? They're miserable. Do you know the husbands and the wives and the children of angry people? They're miserable because it's miserable to live with an angry person. To have an angry father, to have an angry mother, to have an angry spouse. That's Gehenim in this world. Kol Mine Gehenim. You don't have to wait till the next world. It's already here. There are a lot of wonderful midos, and there are unfortunately many bad midos. But there's nothing like kas. There's nothing like anger. It is the gateway to Gehenim in this world and the next. And I'll end just with, if you give me 2 more minutes, with a story. I started off with a vort that brought us to Pesach, so I'll conclude with a vort, a story, a maisela from Purim. They tell a story over about Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Like every big Rav, he had a little bit of a tzedakah fund that he could give out money, and certainly for Purim, Matas Avyonim, people are waiting in line to take money from him. He's with his gabbai, and in the line comes a person, he didn't recognize him, but he clearly looked like an ani, he gave him money. The line is winding and winding, and 10 minutes later, who comes up in line? With the hat is pulled a little differently, and the jacket's a little different, but Reb Chaim Volozhiner is a smart guy, you're not going to fool him. He sees it, and the gabbai is ready. A chutzpah, a ganef, a schnor and a ganef. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, no. He gives him a second time. 5 minutes later, the line is still going. And with a different hat and a little bit of a different jacket, the guy comes again. And this time the gabbai is ready to throw him out on his head. And again, Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, stop. But before he gives him the money, this time at least he's going to let him know that he knows the score. So he tells him, hey, yo, sister Shana Dritamol, you and I both know this is already the third time you're here. A zagmir shtickelvort. At least tell me something. Give me a good dvar Torah before I give you the money. So the guy tells him as follows. There's a medrash, a wild Purim medrash, which tells us that Mordechai, at the climactic moment, before they knew what was going to happen, he met Eliyahu HaNavi. And he asked him, this decree that Haman wrote, which obviously Hashem must have endorsed, we're about to get slaughtered, was it written bidam, in blood, or bidyo, with ink? And again, this is a little bit of a mystical idea, but apparently, according to the Medrash, if it's written with ink, it could be erased. But if it's written with blood, then there is no chance. We are done. And the Medrash says that Eliyahu told Mordechai, there's still a chance, don't give up, it's written bidyo. End of the Medrash. So, asks this vagabond, this guy, he asks to, says to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, where did we, what's the makor? You know, any good Medrash, if it's a real Medrash, there has to be some basis in pshat. Where do we get this in Megillas Esther, this whole conversation that it's blood, not, it's ink, not blood? So he says, I'll tell you. He tells Reb Chaim, the Gadol HaDor, he tells him, I'll tell you the pshat. In the Perek Gimel it says, Im Ahamelech Tov, Yikasev Lo Abdam. Right, so Haman tells Achashverosh, if it's pleasing to the king, you should write Lo Abdam. What does that mean? To kill them. How do you spell Lo Abdam? Lamed Aleph, Beis, Dalid Mem. Says this fellow, this poor guy, Taichit Lo Bedam. Not Lo Abdam, just put a space, a psik. Lo Bedam. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner is blown away. He gives him the money. And he says to the gabbai, I gotta go. And he runs to the Rebbe, he runs to the Vilna Gaon. He says, I don't understand. How could it be? I mean, you know, with all modesty, I never heard such a brilliant pshat. This medrash I knew my whole life, I could never make heads or tails of it. Lo badam, lo abdam. This ganef shnur, this oisvorm, and he knew it, and I didn't know it. So the Vilna Gaon tells him, this guy, he was Eliyahu HaNavi. And you merited a Gilu Eliyahu. Because when you had every right to be angry, you controlled your temper. And therefore, you merited a Pshat, a Chiddush, and a Gilu Eliyahu, because you didn't lose your temper. So I'll just end with the following bracha and word to the wise. I am in no position to guarantee anybody a Gil Yahu. But I will tell you what we said before. If we can work on this, because all of us, some of us have this more severely and we should be honest with ourselves, and some of us have it a little bit. We all have it, some. We all have the problem on some level. But if we can work on that to control our anger, not only will we be better Jews, better Ode Hashem, better people, we'll be better husbands, we'll be better wives, we'll be better fathers, we'll be better mothers, we'll be better neighbors, we'll be better friends, we'll be better people, and we'll be happier, and we'll be more besimcha, more b'shlemus. You won't have to wait till 120 to go olam haba, because you'll have, if not Gilu Eliyahu, you'll have heaven on this earth, because you'll be living that kind of life. That's how important it is if we can work on that. My tefillah, my bracha to all of us, is that we should do so.